You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter at Fantasy Benefits or join the Facebook discussion groups www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter at Fantasy Benefits for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man. I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast. That episode back a couple weeks ago with Steve. I don't know how to keep the date straight anymore. At the end of the day, we're giving you the content, and you do with it what you will.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I was going to actually have a segue. Like, there was going to be fluidity to this. It was going to be awesome.
Wait, we can't do that. We're not allowed to be a professional on this show.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
If you're going to make a case for him, make his case.
Nope. I was looking into, so what's more criminal, that or the Jordan Zimmerman price of $320?
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to the Friends with Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am your host, Mike Werner, and I'm here with you for another team preview episode with my boy, Evan Peterson. Evan, what's going on, dude?
Not a whole lot. We're talking Tigers tonight.
Yeah, that we are. It's a team that you or I have no allegiance to. I mean, we don't really, have any love for them necessarily, but they are kind of a fascinating team to go through once you kind of look at the club from top to bottom. And it's probably a little early to record the show since they probably have a couple moves they're going to make regardless. Kind of like with the Orioles show, I had a feeling like, we would be a little bit early on that, but regardless, this is a good team to kind of get a little jump on at this point.
Yeah, and it was funny that, we actually brought up Seth Smith as a pot, when we were talking about Joey Ricard and late outfield depth, and ends up he was the one going to Baltimore, so right on.
Right on. Yeah, and if you want to, hear any thoughts on the Seth Smith deal, we have that covered on the earlier episode this week with Steve Gardner, so actually, you probably won't hear this episode for a couple weeks. So regardless, there's that episode back a couple weeks ago with Steve. I don't know how to keep the date straight anymore. At the end of the day, we're giving you the content, and you do with it what you will. You can reach me on Twitter at Mike Werner, FWFB. Evan, where can we reach you on social media?
At EasyEv3, and still trolling people about their Vincent Velasquez love. So
hit me up. You need to calm that shit down. That's I have no patience for this bullshit.
Getting us going.
Yeah, in a very negative light. But with that said, a guy that doesn't have any negative light, at least at this point, is Miguel Cabrera. What is there really to say about Miguel Cabrera other than he's just consistent, he's solid, somebody that we can always rely on. There's really nothing negative I can, really take from Miggy at this point. He's going 16th overall in NFBC right now. He was 12th last season at this same time. Evan, is there really anything to say about Miggy at this point?
No. If I'm getting Miguel Cabrera in the second round, I'm doing cartwheels, and I'm fat and don't do cartwheels. And so that probably means it's a good thing. I was taking a look at really the difference between him and Anthony Rizzo, and I get the steals thing, but I mean, I'm not going to sit there and argue at the end of the draft or end of the first round. Miggy's the guy that I want on my team.
Yeah, I don't want to drag this out. He's 34. He's still not, he's not at the kind of the tail end of his prime, but he's not outside of his prime quite yet. He actually got better as the season went on last year. In the second half from July on, he hit .336 with 20 bombs. The expected batting average, baseball HQ metric, was sitting at .300. So yeah, he outperformed that a bit with a .336 average. But regardless, the hard contact was out of this world. The fly ball rate, while it's not, insane, while it's not over 40% like you see with some of these, 40, 50 home run hitters, it was still sitting at 38%. content, which is what we love to see. There's nothing in his profile that has me worried in any way, shape, or form that he can't continue this. Will he hit another 38 bombs next year? Probably not. I would expect more in the, you know, early 30s, maybe 29 to 34, something in that range. But if he was to surpass that, I wouldn't be surprised. And at the end of the day, this is somebody that has logged, you know, 500 plus at bats. Besides 2015, he's logged 500 plus at bats every single year of his career except for 2003. So when you're looking at a first round pick, yeah, consistency, reliability, he had all of those things are checked right next to Miggy's name. So I think we can move on fairly easily here. Ian Kinsler, though, somebody that, you know, last season I really didn't have many shares of. He's getting up there in age at 35. And, you know, when I think of Ian Kinsler, I think of somebody that has durability issues. But last season was actually his third straight year getting over 600 at bats, which I find kind of fascinating. And it not only that, it was his, what, sixth straight year getting over 545 at bats. So, like, this is a guy that's also consistent. You know, this is, mind you, in 2016, 28 home runs was only the second time since 2011 that he surpassed 25 bombs. So, you know, definitely expect a little bit of power regression here. But what are your thoughts on Ian Kinsler right now for this season? You know, right now in NFBC, he's currently going as the ninth second baseman, about pick 75. Are you interested in that price?
Yeah, I'm very interested. I think when you factor in the quote unquote health concerns, that's driving the price down. His age is driving the price down, even though you haven't really seen a, you know, precipitous drop off in speed. Steamer still hasn't projected for double digits in a year when he's going to turn 35. The power is the mirage here, I think. 24% and 26.4% hard hit rates in his first 2 years in Detroit. And then you look at a 34% last year, and the ball was going over the fence. Steamer hasn't projected at 17, and I don't know. I would take the under on that personally, even though the fans' projections on Fangraphs had him projected as 23, which is stupid crazy to me. Like, where would you pin an over-under for Kinsler's home runs?
I'd pin it at 16.
Yeah, so under on there.
Yeah, I would go under. I mean, if you look at his home runs the, you know, 4 years prior, 11, 17, 13, and 19. So he hits over two of them. He hits under two of them as well. It's kind of a 50% rate there.
Yeah, there was also issue on pitches outside of the zone. He made contact on less than 70% of those that he swung at, compared to the previous 5 years where he was at least 75% or higher for that category. So, I mean, there may be some deterioration in the batting eye, but I think he's still in a solid spot in a very good run-producing lineup.
Yeah, I can't really put my finger on the Tigers right now because they have a at least an offense that can compete. I mean, we're against the rotation and, you know, whether this is a question mark for them or not, but the lineup, at least as it is at this current moment, can definitely compete with, you know, pretty much any offense at this point. And Ian Kinsler at the top of that, you know, certainly could, you know, have another year in which he, you know, racks up over 100 runs scored, you know, and that's where he got a lot of his value. Despite scoring 117 runs, driving in 83, and then also, you know, hitting 28 bombs and 14 stolen bases, he was still only the seventh best second baseman in fantasy last year, according to ESPN's Player Rater. Mind you, that also includes Jonathan Villar as a, you know, second base guy, Daniel Murphy, Gene Segura. So if you take those guys out, then he was more of like a fifth place finisher. But, you know, regardless, he's consistent, and that's what you'd be paying for in the top 75. You're not paying for upside there. You're more or less paying for a guy that is going to be consistent, and, you know, I don't mind that. So I don't think that the home runs are going to stick, like we already mentioned. The home run to fly ball rate is going to regress negatively. He had a 13% rate last season. We'll surely see that drop a bit. But, you know, somebody that's probably going to continue to hit somewhere between 270, you know, 275, and, you know, provide double-digit home runs, probably double-digit steals, too. The speed score went down from 2015 when he stole 10 bases, and then, you know, but he stole 14 last year. So, you know, the speed score here doesn't necessarily correlate with the actual production, but regardless, he's a pretty safe guy to, you know, go double-double in terms of stolen bases and home runs. And I think that we can kind of just move forward. Jose Iglesias, any interest at all?
Nope. Pass.
Yeah. He's a hard pass for me as well. AL only owners. You're talking about a guy that, just, I mean, he really doesn't rack up much of anything. You know, he can, if he does have the ability to hit for, you know, 270 plus batting average, but his ground ball rate each of the, you know, 4 years that he's been involved in the league, 59%, 56%, 56%, 51%. There's just no home run profile here at all. There's really no speed here as well. I mean, he can get you a handful. Last year he got 7, you know, the year before he got 11. So maybe in a deep AL only, and I'm talking like 12 teams or deeper, he's an option, but there's really not much to say here about somebody like Jose Iglesias. Now, here's possibly, arguably, the most interesting case on this team, and that's Nick Castellanos. I'll tell you flat out, I'm in love with the guy, at least for this season, because his price is pretty much nothing. Him and Mike Moustakas are right next to each other in NFBC at the moment. 206 overall for both of them, both going as the 19th and 20th third basemans on the board. And behind, might I add, Ryan Healy, Hernan Perez, Justin Turner, even Javier Baez is going a solid 80 picks ahead of him. Evan Longoria, Jose Ramirez, these are all guys, again, going ahead of both of them. I understand Castellanos got hurt last season, and a hand injury is certainly something that we want to monitor. But, you know, the first half last year, 299 average, 14 home runs, and 300 at-bats. We saw, you know, a massive uptick in some of the power metrics. We also saw him increase his – we've seen him increase his fly ball percentage every single year since 2014. So 2014, 37%, 2015, 40%, last year, 43%. We've seen the home run to fly ball rate grow each of those years. The hard contact has grown as well. I mean, there's just across-the-board improvements from Castellanos, and if he is, you know, pretty much injury free at this point and, you know, fully healed from that hand injury, he's definitely, in my opinion, a top, at least a top 10 third baseman. Tell me why I'm wrong.
I mean, top 10 is right at the borderline, but I really like Castellanos too. However the hell you want to say his fucking name. 285 is not going to happen again, especially with a career strikeout percentage that's basically 25%. And you were talking about the fly ball rate, that BABIP's coming down. He makes great contact, 35.7% hard hit rate last year, and he was not showing up on the qualified leaderboards because of the injury. But the names that he would have been next to on the list had he qualified, Jason Kipnis, Polanco, Beltre, Robinson Cano, Odor, Manny Machado. I mean, in that same exercise, he doesn't make bad contact either. It's 11.5% for a soft contact rate, and that would be the fourth lowest in the league behind Miguel Cabrera, JD Martinez, and Matt Carpenter. So I think there's 20 home runs in this bat if he plays a full season. His RBI potential is, you know, the strikeouts can stay somewhat in line with all those bats in front of him. I see great things for him this year, too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the first half last season and kind of filtering through a bit, and he was top 10 in ISO among all third basemen in the first half. If you look at, you know, the home runs just by itself, he was number 10 as well. He was behind, you know, Michael Franco and Kyle Seager, a few other guys, but, you know, and some of your big boppers up top. But I think that this is a bigger kind of, the bigger takeaway here is that third base is relatively deep. You know, if you can grab a guy like Castellanos, you know, I mean, right now he's going 206. That's approximately what the, 15th, 18th round, somewhere in there. If I can do math.
You know, we're bad at math.
Nope. Yeah, nope. We're terrible at math. If the Koji Urahara talk wasn't any indication, but regardless, I think that this shows that the position is fairly deep. And, you know, maybe I'm kind of over, I didn't really talk about his batting average, but that is a great, you know, point. His batting average probably sits more in the 260 to 250 range rather than 285, which is what he ended up with last year, despite hitting 242 in the second half or 243. But, you know, regardless, you know, somebody that I think can definitely hit 20 home runs if given the whole entire season and has made, again, you know, some improvements in the fly ball profile and the, you know, overall hard contact. So I definitely like what I'm seeing from Castellanos.
I just look at it and I don't understand why, you know, Michael Franco's going almost 100 picks in front of him. And I mean, Franco doesn't have quite the strikeout issues that Castellanos does, but couldn't they have the exact same year otherwise?
Sure. Yeah. And, you know, Franco's really different in the sense, like, he's almost unusable in OBP formats. He just is a free swinger. Castellanos has some of that in him, but he at least walks a little bit. The fact that he, you know, on the season, he struck out 27% of the time, but in the first half, he, you know, did a little bit better with the contact rate. So, you know, I'm looking at the first half as more of what I believe in rather than the hand injury that cost him a lot of the second half being what, you know, what he will be going forward, if that makes any sense.
Yep.
All right, so let's move on to the outfield. The first guy I want to get to is JD Martinez, because this is kind of what I'm confused about with the Tigers is, you know, in my opinion, do they need to rebuild to make a title run sometime in the next, you know, 5-6 years? Yeah, they do, but I think that would include trading Miggy and Ian Kinsler and just a lot of these other options. But regardless, you know, JD Martinez seems to be the one guy that is assured to be moved at some point. And, you know, if and when that does happen, then I guess we can kind of go through some of the scenarios. But at least for right now, you know, the Phillies and Giants are the biggest players for him. We're going to go through this show assuming that he stays, and then we'll also kind of paint a picture if he were not to stay and what, you know, possibly could fill in, not knowing what the Tigers would get in return. So it's going to be kind of difficult to go through that. But regardless, JD Martinez last season was going amongst the top 35 picks. This year he's a 50th pick overall. You know, what do you think about JD Martinez if he were to stay a Tiger, or even if he wasn't to stay a Tiger? Say he'd go to another, you know, neutral ballpark with the Giants, or which is a kind of pitcher friendly. But regardless, even if he was with Philly or the Giants or with Detroit, what do you think about JD for this year?
Well, I think when I was doing my research, I was reading something about the dimensions at Comerica, and they were talking about these long fly balls to center that JD Martinez would hit that just would fall short of the fence. And they say he was getting robbed of like 5 home runs a year or something like that. He's got thump in the bat, and I think with a little bit of a ballpark adjustment, I think that power is going to play pretty much anywhere. If you look at a spray chart, you can see where a little bit of luck one way or another, and the, you know, 22 home runs that he hit last year is easily, you know, flirting with 30, and I don't put 30 past him at all if the health is there. He was absolute dog shit in May, where he hit 229. I think something like that probably had something to do with being moved to second in the lineup. Some people just feel more comfortable, and he hit 226 out of the two hole compared to 350 out of the five spot. So he's the 10th outfielder off the board according to NFBC data. And I was looking at your personal rankings. You have guys like Nelson Cruz, Braun, and Cespedes right in front of him. I think I'm fairly on board with evaluation like that. Although the one guy you had him ahead of, like light years ahead of, was George Springer. And I kind of throw him in this range. So I'm interested to get your thoughts on kind of that grouping there and where JD Martinez fits in.
Yeah, I don't have my rakes up right in front of me, but typically when I make my rakes, I have projections for each player up, and then I, you know, kind of make a overall score for each one, and that's kind of how I make my rankings, at least from top to bottom. Obviously, it's subject to change, but at least
not trying to, you know, paint you into a corner and say you have to choose this guy over him or anything.
No. You're good. So you were saying that, I mean, I can't even pull him up right now, but regardless, you were saying that I have Springer behind him or in front of him? Because I would assume I have him in front of him.
Yeah, you had Springer way low. You had Springer ranked like 20th in the outfield.
Yeah, because I'm not like as high that on Springer. I pretty much all the guys that you named, Cespedes, Braun, and Cruz, I definitely have ahead of JD just because they've done it. They've proven it, you know, over and over again. I don't have really anything to worry about with them. JD, I think people are going to kind of continue to chase his 2015, you know, where he hit almost 40 bombs and, you know, pretty much had a breakout of all breakouts for him, at least. You know, since 2014, when he changed his swing, he's been a consistent power source. You know, last year, he probably would have ended up, you know, somewhere in the 30 home run range if he was healthy all season. And that would have been nice, but I do think that going forward, he's more of a 25, 28, you know, 30 home run guy, not a 35 plus home run guy. So, you know, people will take him in the top 50, I think, or top 70 or whatever. No, top 50. I think that that's just a little much for him, you know, especially if he were to get moved. I've never been a JD Martinez guy. So it's, you know, I've kind of gotten, you know, he's kind of proven me wrong each of the last few years here. But, you know, more importantly, last year, his 36% fly ball rate was much less than the year before in 2015 when he had 43%. The ISO went down, you know, the home run to fly ball rate went down. So if we're expecting for this year somewhere in the vicinity of a 18 to 19% home run to fly ball rate, and he consistently has, you know, he has a, you know, a 37% fly ball rate like he has had the last few years besides 2015, then I think that he's more of a 28 to, you know, 30 to 33 home run guy or somewhere in there. So I, you know, regardless, that's a really good, really good power source, but it's not somebody that I feel like you can get that anywhere. You know, he's not a 300 batting average guy, which is what he's done, you know, pretty much two of the last 3 years. And then 2015, he had 280 average. There's just no way that continues. You know, 2014, when he hit 315, he had a 29% strikeout rate and he didn't walk much. 2015, he had 282 average. Again, a 30% strikeout rate. Last year, 307, he had a, you know, 28% strikeout rate. Like, that's just not something that guys do. You know, you usually, you know, if you strike out that much, like we were talking about on the Orioles show with a extreme example, Chris Davis, if you strike out that much, then typically you are prone to having, you know, lapses in batting average. And I think that he is a candidate to do that probably as soon as this year. But I've been saying the same thing about JD each and every year, and he consistently puts up power numbers and consistently hits close to 300. So at some point, something has to give. And in my opinion, I'm just going to keep on kind of shouting it from the rooftops until it happens.
Well, I mean, you got to fall off sometime, right? So eventually you'll be.
He's still so young, though. I mean, 29. I would have assumed that he's like 33 by now. And I mean, the guy's like ageless. It's kind of crazy. But he did spike his walk rate last year, which is nice to see. And his batting eye has gotten better. So you know, that's definitely something we would like, you know, to continue to improve if he is going to, you know, kind of continue to hit 300. Which I just don't foresee that happening. If I'm going to put like a round projection on it right now, I think that he hits somewhere in the 270 range, which would definitely be much lower than what he's done the last 3 years, probably somewhere in the 27, 29, 30 home run range. And then, you know, whatever the, you know, RBI and run numbers are based on where he goes.
And you're pretty much dead on with what Steamer has him at, a 275 batting average, 27 home runs, 90 and 80 for run and RBI total. So yeah, you're looking good.
There you go. Let's go to like my favorite player of last season that definitely did not pan out, and that is Justin Upton.
Yeah.
You know, other than saying that I was completely wrong, I mean, he was a top 50 pick last year, and I was, you know, putting him as a possible fantasy MVP candidate. That's how high I was on Justin Upton. So, you know, anybody that really listened to that, I apologize, but trust me, I was right there with you pretty much all year, except for in like the shallowest of formats where I dropped him finally after, you know, just months upon months of terrible, terrible production. But regardless, you know, right now in NFBC, he is going at about pick 82. So we're seeing about a 30 to 35 pick, you know, decrease in terms of price from last year. You know, what are you thinking with Justin Upton at this point?
Well, you were saying you didn't know how we ended up on the Tigers. If you don't remember, last year we had a Twitter exchange when Justin Upton got hurt in spring training and we were going back and forth, and you were still calling him a 30-20 guy. I actually went back and looked at this. So that is something that
he
can
did
come
go
back
30.
And haunt you.
I just want to say he did go 30.
No, I was completely going to give you credit for that. I didn't get that far. But yeah, the steals, we were talking about how Atlanta kind of, you know, squandered him on the base paths. 13 steals in 2016 was very reminiscent of when he was in Atlanta and he was barely getting double-digit steal attempts. At the end of June last year, he was hitting .228 with 8 home runs. It wasn't looking good for your 30 home run projections, but he popped 22 in the second half, including 13 in September, where his home run to fly ball rate was over 35%. He's had months like that before, and they weren't all in like his Diamondback days. Like, he actually did good things in Atlanta, but it shows how streaky he can be, and you can't depend on something like that. And typically when he has those outbursts, they're in the beginning of the year, in May and March, or when the other three happen. So lefties are becoming an issue. Batting average down over the past 2 years, but I think it does provide a solid buying opportunity for Justin Upton.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm willing to go back to the well. He did have the second highest fly ball percentage in the second half last year. You already kind of talked about his, you know, September, which was by far not only the best month of the year, but it was by far the, you know, only thing that salvaged his value. If he did not have that, you know, that incredible month of September slash, you know, one home run in October, then we're looking at a guy that, you know, dropped 13 home runs, you know, on the season. Mind you, I mean, that's assuming he didn't hit any the rest of the way. But what I love about that month is that he, you know, walked 13% of the time, and that he, you know, maintained a very high fly ball rate. ISO was obviously there as well. So, I mean, the plate skills were great. You know, his 27% strikeout rate that month was not as bad as, you know, the, you know, four of the other 5 months that he was participating in. But I'm also willing, I mean, he's also only 29. I'm willing to not necessarily just like completely throw last season out the window, because I think that that would be irrationally stupid. But I do think that we can understand a player going from playing in the NL his whole entire career, going to the AL, going to a new team, going to a new environment, and not being really the guy either. You know, you're going on a team with Miggy, Ian Kinsler, you know, guys that have been there and done that for a long time. And, you know, maybe he just felt like he wanted to make his presence known a little bit more than he should have, and he started pressing a bit. I mean, strikeouts have always been in his profile, so I'm not going to sit here and say that that wasn't going to happen anyways. But at the end of the day, he hit 30 home runs and he stole almost 10 bases. Was it what I thought he would do? No, but it could have been worse. It could have been much worse. So, you know, when you're looking at fantasy players, you know, Upton still has the, you know, the ability to hit 30 home runs and steal 20 bases. Do I think that he steals 20 with the Tigers? I think based on what they did last season and based on the fact that they don't really have a manager that wants to steal a ton, I don't think that that's in the cards. But I think that the best case scenario you can look for is maybe 12 to, you know, 13 stolen bases, which I don't think will happen. I think he'll stay under 10, but I do think the power is still legit, and I think the batting average will get better than it was last season. He ended up at 246. I think we'll see him hit up, you know, north of 250 to 260 this season, and, you know, continue with the home run. So that in my opinion makes him a top 80 player, and that's about where he's going right now, and I'm okay with that. I think that the upside is still there. I just am not I definitely don't have as much I don't know, I guess I don't have as much what's the word I'm looking for, certainty that it'll happen. I was fairly certain that he was going to be an absolute monster last year, and conviction is what I was looking for. I don't have as much conviction that he's going to be an absolute superstar in fantasy.
It could happen.
It can happen. All right, so let's see. They have Tyler Collins in the outfield, really a platoon option. Yeah. I'm really not looking for anybody like that. So JD Martinez, if he were to get moved, obviously he plays right field for them. Where do we go if he were to get moved? I mean, obviously we have on their bench Jacoby Jones and Steven Moya. Moya, I would assume, would get a lot of the at-bats in right field because he is a, you know, basher from the left-hand side. Jacoby Jones also has the ability to play the infield as well, so he might be able to kind of, you know, give Nick Castellanos a breather if, you know, if they need to. But do you have any interest in Jacoby Jones or Steven Moya if JD Martinez gets traded or if he doesn't get traded?
Yes, Steven Moya is the name that I like here. He got way better in his second look at AAA last year, hit 284 compared to his 2015 stretch where he hit 240. And, you know, five home runs and 100 at-bats, the, you know, strikeouts on the big league level look, you know, really inflated when you stare at that 38% number. But I think he's the guy that I would draft out of these two personally.
Yeah, and he's absolutely free. I, you know, it's kind of hard to talk about this trade just because I'm fairly certain it happens, but I don't know what the Phillies or the Giants would give back in return. Say the Phillies do get JD Martinez, you would expect somebody like Nick Williams to come back in the deal, and if he comes there, then that kind of changes things. So I think Williams would be, definitely the better bet of these two. Since you talked about Moya, I do like Moya in the same kind of way that you do. I think that he obviously presents the higher upside in terms of power. Obviously with guys like that have, 40 plus home run power in their bat, if given an opportunity, there comes the strikeout rate. So, that's something that you'll have to kind of monitor as the season goes on, but he definitely has a great power profile and that always plays in fantasy. He has shown the ability to walk as well. So, you're looking at a guy that has the ability to be somewhat of like a, Chris Davis light if things were to work out. Jacoby Jones, though, he got a brief kind of cup of coffee with the Tigers last year, only less than 30 at bats, but struck out a ton. Is somebody in the minor leagues that Baseball HQ just did kind of their organization reports on each and every club. And I know Matt is also going to do a prospect podcast on all these guys anyways. And I'm sure Jones will be kind of, involved in that. But, last year he ended up going, six or seven home runs and 13 stolen bases between all levels, between, double A and triple A, and then also in the majors. That's not bad. If you kind of, and that was only in less than 400 at bats total. He's always had fairly decent batting averages as well. Somebody that can also take a walk. I just don't love the upside. I think that he's more of a, 10 home run, 12 to like 15 stolen base guy. If he were given a full-time role, obviously that's not happening this year. So I'm kind of blah on Jacoby Jones in a nutshell.
Well, and the important thing to note is out of him, Moya, and Tyler Collins, he's the only one with options left. So I think he's going to find himself odd man out if it comes down to it.
Yeah, right now they have Anthony Gose penciled in the minors, and I'm not really I don't really think that that's going to happen. They also have like guys like Alex Presley as well and stuff. But if I were to bet on it, I would assume that Jones would start in the minors and they would have Ghost up there, which, Ghost is a speed only guy. He's really not relevant for fantasy at this point, but somebody to kind of talk about.
He's relevant for playing center field for, the Tigers, but that's about it.
Exactly. That's literally about it. Victor Martinez, this is who I really want to get to. Ended up as a top 40 player in the ESPN player rater last season. I mean, pretty insane. I the guy just seems like he's ageless. He's 38 years old this season, put up 27 bombs last year, very similar to the 2014 in which he put up 32 home runs, not in terms of the batting average, but just overall the power stuff. The power numbers are very similar. 16% home run to fly ball rate in 2014. This last season, 15%. I mean, that's pretty identical. The fly ball profile has actually stayed fairly the same the last 3 years, 38, 39, and 39% respectively. It seems to me like every other year, his power shoots up through the roof and then it kind of dies down. So, based on what's happened the last couple of years, this should be a down year. Are you expecting that to happen?
Well, I think the things you're worried about are obvious injury and the DH only designation. As far as his batting eye and everything like that, I think it's pretty much like we said with Miggy, I think everything's pretty steady on course. I've been using Roster Resource a lot this offseason, kind of seeing where they slot people in as far as, lineup and whatnot. And off to the side, they actually have this thing that's called MLB hitter power rankings for the previous year. And they break them into first half, second half. While I don't know exactly what goes into their formula, they have Victor Martinez ranked 29th for his first half that he had last year, which Ian Kinsler was 24th and Miguel Cabrera was 23rd. So he still has the ability to put up fantastic numbers. And I don't know as far as him being DH only, how far it's going to push him down in drafts. As I was doing more research, I kind of got mad because I don't think he should be going 50 picks behind Kendrys Morales. When I started looking at some of the numbers, do you have an opinion there to kind of go off track for a quick second?
I love Kendrys Morales just based on the park he's going to, but I disagree with how many picks they're separated by. So yeah. I'm definitely in your camp.
Oh, okay, yeah. And the one other weird thing that might help somebody out somewhere down the road is that Victor Martinez is playing 8 games in NL Parks after June 23rd. So if you own him in a deep head-to-head format, he could put you in a bind, you know, sitting out games if you become reliant on him. But like I said, that's if he's still on the field at that point in time.
That's a great stat. That's awesome. He did tail off a bit in the second half last year. Vimar did, 318 batting average in the first half, 258 in the second. He did up his walk rate though, and he's always been an elite contact guy. You know, I mean, these last 2 years haven't been as elite. You know, 84% contact rate and 88% in 2015, but across the board, you know, years and years throughout his career, he's always been a, you know, I think his career contact rate is 88%. He eclipsed 90 in 3 straight years from 2011 to 2014. So his batting eye is really good. You know, and that's what's made him just kind of age seamlessly here. 38 years old, and he still is just one of the great hitters in the game. I think 228 is too late. You know, even if he does drop in power, which I expect him to, what does it drop to? You know, 15 home runs, 16, somewhere in there, and you're still getting a guy that's going to hit for a premium batting average, more than likely, somebody that still can take a walk in OBP formats. I don't know if he's eligible in at catcher in any place. I doubt he is. I don't think he caught any games last year. So, no. You know, you probably will have to play him at utility, but, I mean, when you're looking at utility guys, I mean, you're losing Dave Ortiz this year. You know, I mean, he's obviously not going to have the Ortiz year of 2016 either, but like, I can find way worse options than, you know, filling a utility spot with somebody like V-Mart. So I think that he's going in a very, very economical spot. I mean, right in front of him right now, at least in drafts, is, you know, guys like what? Greg Bird, CJ Krohn, Chris Carter, Eric Thames, or Thames, whichever way you want to pronounce that. I Yasiel Puig, I would definitely take above V-Mart at this point. Same with Randall Grichuk. But like Tommy Joseph, you know, Tommy Joseph isn't as refined of a hitter as V-Mart, even at, you know, even though their ages are, you know, much different. Mike Napoli, there's a lot of guys here that I would definitely take V-Mart over. So I think that he's not going at an extremely great cost, but he's definitely going at a very good place right now.
Absolutely agree.
All righty. Well, I guess we can move on to the rotation. Alex Avila's there to back up James McCann. You know, James McCann's okay. There's not much I really need to say about him. I just think that he's kind of I thought he would improve, take a step forward last year. And, you know, based on watching him more, there was, for some reason, I just watched a lot of Tigers last year. And James McCann's just the type of guy that I don't think that there's going to be a lot there in terms of fantasy. You know, do you share that opinion, or do you think that, you know, there's something here?
Yeah, I honestly didn't even take notes on him, but didn't he hit like 220 against righties last year? Like, it was awful. And Avila hit like 247. Planning to skip over this.
No worries. No, I mean, he hit 201 against righties. So, and maybe that's why they brought in Avila to hit against righties, which is, you know, fine from a baseball perspective. From fantasy, I don't like either of them. I will say against lefties for a DFS format, McCann hit, you know, 9 home runs and 120 at bats, 258 batting average. So that's not terrible. But in terms of his overall skills, I mean, he took a massive drop last year. I mean, he had a 32% strikeout rate on the season. And, you know, he did have a spike in terms of his power output in the beginning of last year. And then it kind of just tailed off. You know, in June, he ended up hitting 4 home runs. That was by far his best month. And then from there on, he just kind of dropped off. And, you know, there really just wasn't much there. So that's your James McCann talk. You get like a quick minute and a half, and that's it.
There you go.
All right, so let's go to this rotation. Justin Verlander kind of leads things. He's, you know, kind of been resurgent since coming back and, you know, kind of refining his arsenal and his stuff for that matter. But he's going as the 10th starting pitcher, 45th overall in drafts. That's insane to me. I don't know what you think.
Well, that's exactly where you have him in your rankings. And it was funny, you had him ahead of Noah Syndergaard, Yu Darvish, and Jake Arrieta. So, I mean, I think that's a pretty good range. He's been nothing but consistent. He's, since 2006, he's thrown 30 or more starts in all but 1 year, and he's only had an ERA over 4 twice. And that's fighting through, you know, core surgery, which really screwed him up. the thing that really helped him out last year was his work with the fastball. He was able to reclaim almost a full tick on the radar gun, hitting closer to 94. Opponents hit 218 off the pitch compared to a career 255, and 12.2% swinging strike rate on a fastball. Last time he did that was back in 2009, and we're talking some of the best numbers of his career for a guy who's thrown a ton of fastballs. I just think there's a lot to like here. And the other thing that I've taken a look at this offseason is luck with men on base versus bases empty. Would you guess that 22 of his 30 home runs came with the bags empty? So I don't know that we're going to see a year where he cracks over four, but I think, you know, over 3.5 is definitely something you could expect from Verlander if the luck shakes out a little differently for him.
Yeah, so, you know, first off, starting pitcher is really tough to rank this year. I don't believe in Syndergaard at all. I'm still really worried about his health and durability. I've pretty much taken the stance that if I don't get one of the top four, Mad Bum, Chris Sale, Max Scherzer, or Clayton Kershaw, I'm going to wait on my ace for a while. And, you know, that might include, you know, the Zach Greinke's of the world that's going almost at pick 100 at this point. But, you know, I like Verlander. I do. And, you know, that's why I ranked him as such. But I just, yeah, the upside to me just really isn't there anymore. Like, I have pretty much said the same thing on this podcast for a number of years now. And, you know, finally last year, he kind of put it all together. And I love that. He also had his highest swinging strike rate, not only of the last few years, of his career, in 2016. You know, and I am usually, especially with aging pitchers, I like to kind of regress to the mean. And, you know, his mean is more of a 10% swinging strike rate, which is what, you know, his career line is. And when you kind of factor that in, he's going to be more of an 8 strikeout per 9 player. Even if he pitches those 200 innings, which is insanely valuable, that still puts him down as, you know, more of it, especially more than a 3 ERA guy. He was a 3.63 expected ERA, which is an HQ metric. The fly balls are too much as well, 48%, and that's also, you know, coming off the season the year before, mind you, it was injury ravaged, 46% fly ball rate. So, you know, he's getting a little bit lucky in terms of the home runs, even though he gave up an 11% home run to fly ball rate last year. I think that continues, and it could even increase. And then if the strikeouts go down, you're looking at an inflated ERA. You know, regardless, I think he's going to be probably in the 3.3 ERA range. Pretty decent whip because he does have nice control. I mean, he's shown that each of the last 3 years as well, even though he's aging. But I just, in terms of the upside, I can't really bank on him, you know, accumulating 10 strikeouts per 9 again. I think he's going to be much more towards the, you know, career line of 8.5. But again, I still think that, you know, means that he's a top 10 starter.
Yeah, you look at PitchFX data, talking about that fastball one more time, 137 strikeouts. It was the first time he hit triple digits in that category since 2009. And what's funny is if you look at that those seasons together, like I said, last year, opponents hit 218 off his fastball, and that other season they hit 263. So it just historic stuff that he did, and definite regression is coming.
Yeah, and last season was his best year since, like, vintage Verlander in, like, 2012. I mean,
when he won the MVP in 2011.
Yeah, and I love, you know, I'm rooting for Verlander. I love him, so I have no problems with that. It's, you know, and as far as his fastball velocity, that sat actually higher this year in 2016 than it did any year prior to, except for 2012. Like, 2012 was the last time that he had a velocity as high as what he did in 2016. So he might have been feeling the effects of, you know, some of the injuries he had in 2015 well before he got them repaired. So, you know, we might be seeing, I definitely think that he's more towards what he did last season than what he did the 2 years prior, but I don't think that he's going to do what he did in 2016, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
All right. Let's kind of keep going down this, this rotation here. Michael Fulmer, the reigning rookie of the year, right? In the American League, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really go fully into the whole offseason or regular season awards or whatever, but Michael Fulmer really impressed me last year. He you know, did what I thought he wouldn't be able to do, which was become a viable starting pitching option in a rotation that I honestly thought was going to be, you know, just terrible last season. Actually made it kind of formidable at times. Still got hit with a home run bug a bit, but was still able to sit in the 3 ERA range, which, you know, I love to see. The second half was a little bit of a struggle for him, but I do love that we didn't see him drop off in velocity. The strikeouts definitely went down a bit, but He still has an almost 50% ground ball rate both the first and second half. We did see him not strand as many runners. The first half, he had an 85% left on base rate. Second half was 70%. But his BABIP both times were under 300. We could see that kind of inflate this season. But regardless, I think that he's going to be a pretty solid starter, at least for this season and probably moving forward. What are your thoughts on somebody like Fulmer, who's going 146 overall in the starting pitching or overall in NFBC drafts right now?
Yeah, I like Michael Fulmer pretty much everywhere. You want to look for struggles with Michael Fulmer. You look at his splits with men on base. So when the bases are empty, .// 209, 262, 304. With men on, it jumps up to 262, 342, and 466. And the other area he got absolutely lit was going through the lineup a third time. But he was pretty awesome the first couple times through. You look at a 3.32 ERA his first time through the lineup, 1.34 the second time through. So he's making those adjustments. But then he's absolutely cranked to over a 5 ERA the third time through. And that's because 9 of his 16 home runs came when he was going through the lineup a third time. So, as he gets, stretched out, gets used to a major league workload, I think, that's an area where he could, get a little bit better. And I do really like Michael Fulmer, and especially at a 140 price tag, I'm all in.
Yeah, so at least right now he's going 140. Like I mentioned, that is behind Dallas Keuchel, Danny Salazar, Alex Reyes, Tanner Roark, Felix Hernandez, Rich Hill, Matt Harvey. I'm gonna be dead honest, I would take him above all of them.
Oh yeah, there's absolutely no way in hell that I'm taking Rich Hill over Michael Fulmer. There's 0.0%.
But some people would take Alex Reyes. I know a ton of people would take down Danny Salazar, which if somebody were to give me the argument that they wanted to take Salazar over Fulmer, of all of these guys, I would be okay with it because the upside is certainly there. So I have no problem with that. But at least Keuchel, we kind of know what he is at this point. Is he going to be as bad as last year? Probably not, but we know what he is. Alex Reyes, the innings are certainly something that we need to monitor. 33rd starting pitcher is, I think, a little rich to take him there. Tanner Roark, not going to repeat what he did. Felix Hernandez, getting older, the stuff is kind of gone. Rich Hill, we already talked about. And then Matt Harvey, I have no idea what to even say about Harvey at this point because what he has is so difficult to come back from. I know a couple people that have dealt with thoracic outlet syndrome, and it's not easy. So, as much as the stuff could be there, we're going way too long. Either way, Fulmer should be ranked more of a top 25-ish guy than he should be towards the top 40. So I like that price.
I look at Julio Teheran as the name I'm kind of debating in my head here.
I kind of like Teheran for this year as a he had a electric first half, if I'm not mistaken. And I mean, I'd had to dive into his numbers a bit more, but I liked what I saw from Teheran. The absolute deal breaker is Gerrit Cole, because Gerrit Cole at 28 is a crime.
Ridiculous.
It's an absolute crime. So Gerrit Cole is at the top of my wish list. I would have no problem waiting. If I didn't get one of those top starters, I would have no problem waiting and then grabbing Gerrit Cole at 117 or whatever, which it'll probably push up by the time drafts kind of really get going. But I'd have no problem taking him at 117, waiting around, and then going Fulmer right after. 1-2, bam, it's done. Maybe go Taillon after that. Who knows?
Yeah, just see how I feel. Well, maybe there's time.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to, I was going to move on if you're ready.
I was going to actually have a segue. Like, there was going to be fluidity to this. It was going to be awesome.
Wait, we can't do that. We're not allowed to be professional on this show.
No, which is why we had to fuck up and talk over each other. So what's more criminal, that or the Jordan Zimmermann price of 323?
The Jordan Zimmermann price. Although Jarrell Cotton is going, at 266, and that might even be more criminal too, based on Paul Sporer's little video of his changeup the other night, which now it's over with. Everybody's gonna start drafting Cotton, and it's kind of over with at this point. But Zimmermann, if you look at the first half last year, was definitely outperforming. I know the month of April was ridiculous. I mean, he had a 0.55 ERA and a 106 whip. I mean, we all knew that wasn't something that was going to continue, especially with the 8% swing strike rate and the 6 strikeout per 9. Like, he was definitely relying on a .280 BABIP during that time and a 97% left on base rate. But things just really got out of hand. A neck injury just completely derailed his season. Pretty much dropped his numbers to a place that nobody could use. use him. On the season, he ended up with almost a 5 ERA and a 1.4 whip. I can't stress enough that this is not the pitcher that Jordan Zimmermann is. For his career, he's a 3.5 ERA guy, but over the last few years prior, you had seen 3.66, 2.66, 3.25, 2.94, 3.18 ERAs from him. Fairly low whips the majority of those years as well. I mean, if he is back from the neck injury, which I think is expected, as of right now, all the reports have been pretty solid on him, and he's supposed to be ready for the beginning of the season. He's an absolute buy at that price. I know you and I alluded to it in the Orioles show, but I mean, the fact that he's going outside the top 300, I mean, as the 89th starting pitcher is an absolute crime. So yes, I would say that him going there is much more of a crime than Gerrit Cole, although it's probably close.
Yeah. That was the first time he'd hit the disabled list since the elbow surgery back in 2009. And I don't know how much of an effect it had on his 2016. And I don't think anybody can really be 100% sure. You look at that April that you were talking about, he gave up 4 earned runs in those first 33 innings he pitched. It was 5 starts. And then he started 14 games the rest of the year, and 7 of them, he had 4 or more earned runs. So, I mean, you just look at the absolute implosion. And this is a guy you were talking about, his consistency. You look at a 5.8% walk rate for Zimmermann last year, and that was a career high for him. Like, we don't see numbers like this, and I don't think that it's him falling off the table. I think it's just kind of shit luck and an injury. And even if the strikeouts aren't going to be there, you know that going in, and you shouldn't be fooling yourself like, oh, I'm going to catch 100 and even 80 strikeouts in a bottle. Like, it's not going to happen. But at 323, that's the gamble I want to take.
Absolutely. And he's a guy that, prior to 2016, $13 earner, $22 earner, $23, $19, $10. I mean, consistent earner in roto dollar value. And at the end of the day, even if you don't care for Jordan Zimmermann, if you thought he was overrated by what he got paid to go to Detroit and everything, you can't go against the draft price, because at the end of the day, like, you're not paying anything for him. At the very worst, you drop him because he's not somebody you can use, which I think is highly doubtful. There's no risk here. The risk is having, a terrible April in which you drop him, or you kind of wait it out and see if something changes, but you're not grabbing him for strikeouts anyway. If I was going to project his strikeouts this season, I think that it would be probably a little bit south of 7/9, which, no, it's not great, but the fact that he has such elite control really kind of masks that, and it helps you out a ton. So, he always finds a way. He does have a little bit of a fly ball tendency in his profile, but that plays pretty well in Comerica, and it's going to work out. I'm pretty certain that Jordan Zimmermann is at least going to be a top 60 starter this year, and that's if things like really are kind of average and don't even break right for him.
Yeah, that strain rate of 65.7 has to come back up. You're looking at a career 74%. There's positive regression, I think, anyways, coming here.
Yeah, I'm throwing last year out the window, unless the Tommy John honeymoon period, which is an actual thing, kind of comes back to haunt him, and maybe the neck was kind of him, just a part of him being injured, further from his elbow or something. Unless that's happening, there's no downside here. A guy that there is downside to, and I'm honestly don't even know if we should talk about him, is Anibal Sanchez.
Nope.
I'm absolutely done. If you're going to make a case for him, make his case.
Nope. I was looking into, he hasn't been good for the past 2 years, and I was looking at what happened in 2014, and I found an article that quoted him on a pec strain, and he said, quote, "It felt nothing like when I had elbow or shoulder issues before." Great. So now we got a guy talking about how he can't stay healthy, and it's like Tony Romo. If you know your collarbone's broken before you get off the field, you probably shouldn't be playing football. Like, we're talking James Shields territory here. Absolutely no on Anibal Sanchez.
So Baseball HQ has this thing that I love. Obviously I do their matchups column there, and we use what's called pure quality starts to predict, what somebody might do after the course of 5 starts, what they might do in their next outing. And last year, Anibal Sanchez total had 26 games started. And what we look for is, for PQS is what we call it, for PQS 4s and 5s. Those mean that, he had really good ratios, really good, strikeout numbers and walk numbers and, hits to batters faced, etc. He had 3 PQS 4s and 5s out of all 26 games he started last year, which is insanely bad. It's borderline as bad as it gets. Do I think he's as bad as last year? Probably not, but there's nothing here. Between him and Yovan Gallardo, it's like really close. So that should pretty much answer your question in terms of whether he is a viable option in fantasy this year. And, he does strike out more than Gallardo, so I guess I would go with Sanchez over him, but I would assume that his time is ticking here. I don't know how much of a leash, if any, he's going to get. It wouldn't surprise me if he was so bad in spring training they released him.
Right. So Mary fuck kill James Shields, Yovani Gallardo, and Anibal Sanchez.
James Shields, just kill me. I just don't.
That's awful. Sorry. That was a good laugh, though.
It was a good laugh and also made me feel really sad. So let's move on to a guy that doesn't make me feel really sad because he has like a bodacious, can I even use that word, beard? Bodacious beard. Amazing van that he likes to, travel, with and, kind of chill and camp out at. And also survived cancer. You got to give it up to Mr. Daniel Norris. A lot of fantasy upside here. Somebody that was always a big prospect for the Blue Jays got traded over to the Tigers, I believe, in the Ghost deal, right? Wasn't he involved in the Ghost deal? Yep. I could be wrong. But either way, really loved Daniel Norris. Last year, finally got a good amount of time. He did get some time in 2015 as well. But with the Tigers last year, 13 starts, 3.38 ERA. We still saw struggles in terms of the whip. But, overall, the strikeout numbers were nice. 11% swing strike rate was really nice to see as well. That was higher than any other exposure he got in the major leagues. That ended up being just over 9 strikeout per 9 ratio. Also, the best strikeout to walk ratio of his, short career as well. What do you think about Daniel Norris? He's, again, just a pretty much free option at this point. Past pick 300, right near Mr. Jordan Zimmermann there. If you had to pick between the two, who are you going with? And also, in Keeper Dynasty, who are you going with?
Well, in Dynasty Leagues, I would probably go Norris just because of the age difference and the Tommy John surgery already under the belt of Jordan Zimmermann. But the things I did like about Daniel Norris was the way that he ended the season. Great August and September, and huge uptick in the swinging strike rate and the first strike percentage, which are, definite, positive road marks here. For the year, I would say Zimmermann would probably have more value. I'm not exactly sure what you think of Norris's workload here. I mean, he only threw 70 major league innings last year, threw, 73 in AAA, so you're looking at 140. I mean, 175 for innings over-under there.
Yeah, barring health, yeah. I would say that's – I mean, it really, the innings will kind of be determined by him if he's right. Able to get out of starts, but yeah.
Yeah. The other thing that I really like about him is that we're seeing the slider develop. A 304 batting average against in 2015. Last year it was held to a 200 on almost the exact same number of pitches thrown if you look at Fangraph's Pitch FX. So it's becoming a definite weapon for him.
Putting in perspective as well, he had 3 PQS 4 or 5s in his 13 starts, and which is, again, the same amount that Anibal Sanchez had, just to kind of throw some salt on the wound of Anibal Sanchez. But, what I love about Norris is the strikeout upside, and he kind of reminds me of Jonathan Sanchez, like the actually decent one back early in his career, somebody that just we never could rely on for whip, but the strikeout numbers were always there. Throws from the left side, has pretty solid velocity as well. He hit 93 consistently with his fastball last year. You said the slider was developing, and I've watched him pitch a number of times. It's there. There's definitely some upside there. So he is one of the candidates to take late in drafts that could just have, even if he doesn't have a full season of breakout in him, he might have a couple months, and that's really where some of the value could really come, especially in shallower formats. If you just need a guy, how many times do we have one of our frontline starters go down, and then you pick up somebody like Daniel Norris and they give you 2 to 3 really good months? Or in best case scenario, somebody like Danny Duffy last season, who just came up and gave you a full season of greatness. So I like Daniel Norris a lot. I also like his other left-handed counterpart, who was also from Toronto, Matt Boyd, somebody that nobody will draft. And I don't know if you did any notes on him or not, but I do just want to touch on him because he's somebody that really didn't do much last season if you look at the numbers on the surface, but did show some nice, you know, command. Also had four of those PQS 4+ starts out of his, you know, what, 18 starts overall. So that's something really nice to see. Definitely has a lot to improve upon, but a fly ball pitcher that got somewhat unlucky last year, still strikes out, you know, 7+/9. You know, headed towards 8 if things kind of swing right, but really nice swing strike rate, which is what I kind of look for. Second half last year, the 14 starts that he had in the second half, he had a 3.71 ERA, 1.22 whip, pretty solid, you know, nothing amazing, but he did surpass 8 strikeouts per 9. He had a 65% first pitch strike rate, which means he has learned to get ahead of hitters, and he had 11% swing strike rate. That's all while getting kind of hit with home runs as well. So I really like what Matt Boyd can possibly offer. Also had 2 months between July and August in which he had a 2.21 and 2.79 ERAs. I kind of like him.
Yeah, I didn't have any notes on Boyd, but I was looking through it while you were talking. And, you know, the one thing, it's just something I've been looking at. I don't know. It's maybe I'm driving myself nuts with it. But of the 17 home runs that he gave up last year, 13 of them came with bases empty, and he still threw to a 4.5 ERA. So I don't know. Something to keep an eye on there.
I like to look at that stuff, so no, you're not a bit off base there. We'll let Matt Thompson kind of go through some of the minor league guys like Buck Farmer and, you know, such. There's a few arms they have in their system, but I'm not even going to begin to go through the possible scenarios if and when Anibal Sanchez goes down. But I do think Matt Boyd is the first pitcher that would come up in the case that Anibal Sanchez either didn't make the team or just had a, you know, just had a real rough patch at the beginning of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Going to the bullpen, K-Rod, believe it or not.
I thought there was more to that sentence.
No, just believe it or not. I'm not drafting him anywhere. I'm just saying that, like, based on his draft costs, I'm out. So I'm wondering if you are not.
Oh, I haven't necessarily looked at his draft costs per se. Whereabouts is he going?
I would have to double check that, but I think he is in the, let's see, he is the 17th closer being taken off the board at pick 140, just in front of Kelvin Herrera, which is a massive no-no for me. And then Adam Ottavino is at 165. That's another player I would take in front of him. Cam Bedrosian is at 236. I like him more. Ryan Mattson, 228. Hector Neris, 242. You know, if you wanted to go the Sean Kelly or Brandon Kinsler route, they're kind of down there. I mean, there's a lot of bullpens. There's a lot of bullpens that need to kind of get shaken out here, but I'm just not a fan of K-Rod. I mean, you give me the reason to be a fan.
Why do you hate K-Rod? Like, what did he do to you?
He didn't do anything to me. I just, when I watch him, the stuff isn't great, you know, and he kind of gets by, even though he has a great numbers. I just, you know, things have kind of gone downhill, at least for me, like watching him over the last few years. He's definitely not as dominant. Mm-hmm. I feel like he is just one kind of stretch away from not even being a pitcher in the league anymore.
Yeah, I think that when you look at historically what he does, he's historically a guy that's better with the bases occupied. And last year it was completely flipped. And I think it was an absolute anomaly to the way he pitches. I think 140 is a great area. I'm buying. There's no way that I would take Ottavino or Cambridge. Get the fuck out of here with Cam Bedrosian over Francisco Rodriguez. There's absolutely no way in hell. I don't even remember. The only one that I could possibly agree with might be Kelvin Herrera, but that's I'm in on K-Rod then.
Well, I'm pointing him out to be, I'm like making him out to be like this terrible guy, a terrible pitcher, and he's not terrible. I mean, last year as a whole, he had a 55% ground ball rate. That's great. That's exactly what we look for. 8 strikeouts per 9. That's great as well. I prefer more from a closer. The thing for me is there's just no upside there. There's no upside with the pick, in my opinion. And even though he had 44 saves 2 of the last 3 years, I don't love this Detroit club. I think that, again, they're going to lose JD, and this is going to be a club that probably will struggle to, you know, be in the playoff hunt more than likely. So, I mean, not that that exactly correlates to save chances, but what I really don't like is the second half last year and just watching him. You know, I mean, in the second half, he, you know, had a half run ERA more, essentially. The strand rate or left on base rate started to go up. You know, the expected ERA was almost at 4. You know, the strikeouts went down. The home runs went up, especially in September. He had a 5.2 ERA. There's just a couple things that kind of rub me the wrong way with him, even though he is better than I'm making him out to be. So, it's not that I hate people that like K-Rod. I just, with closers, I either like to go with the elite tier or I like to kind of wait and find guys that I can speculate on that have massive upside.
Well, but I think the other, you know, the third option that apparently isn't the way that you play, but that, you know, I could see other people playing in, is that they just kind of wait until that 12, 13 round, and then they double dip on guys that they consider to be, you know, middling, and then they kind of ride it out. Like, why is K-Rod so much, like, worse? I mean, he's not totally worse, but A.J. Ramos and David Robertson in front of us, why
would he be worse than that? I'm not taking any of them in drafts based on their cost, you know. Like, I'll give you my closer, you know, kind of runaround right now before we even do the relief pitcher show. I'm either taking Jansen or Britton up top, or I'm going to take, you know, Sungwon Oh somewhere a little bit after that. Edwin Diaz, Wade Davis, Ken Giles, one of those guys, or I'm waiting. Kelvin Herrera right now is at 140. There's no way that sticks. There was an industry mock the other night. Whenever you guys are listening, this is going to be much, you know, much later than that. But in the industry mock, I believe Paul Spohr was the one that took Kelvin Herrera, and I can't remember the other closer off the top of my head that he took right behind him. But yeah, Kelvin Herrera and Kenley Jansen, he took back to back at 90 and 91. That's perfect. Like, that is my ideal scenario, you know, is to take, you know, two elite options right there back to back. And then kind of wait until later on to where I can get maybe an Ottavino, or I think the Rockies are going to be sneaky decent this year. So I like Ottavino, but there's, a few other options that I would kind of just wait on, later on, you know, and Ryan Matson being one of them. You know, he's at past pick 200. I think that he's a solid get. Daniel Hudson, somebody that we brought up on another show. He is right now, you know, being taken. I can't even find his name at the moment. It's pretty late, but it's there's gonna 5-11. Be options. Yeah, that's gonna change, I would assume. But yeah. It's more of a preference thing than actually hating the player. So there's nothing wrong if you drafted K-Rod each of the last 3 years. I mean, he has been stellar. So I my argument isn't that he's a bad pitcher. It's just that based on where he's going and the upside he possibly provides me, I just would rather go another route. So you know, you're okay with taking him there just because he's been consistent, which I'm fine with. I just have a little bit different, just a little bit different way that I, draft my closers and stuff. So
understandable.
If K-Rod were to go down, do you have a favorite in this bullpen to take over?
Not particularly, but I know Matt's gonna come behind. Oh, holy shit, phrasing.
Come behind you. Is he gonna rub you the right way or the wrong way?
I'm just gonna be accommodating, and I'm gonna listen. Right. the one kind of dark horse that I like here is Joe Jimenez, I believe. Young guy coming up with great strikeout potential, and absolutely love him. But other than that, there's not a ton in the bullpen that really excites me.
Yeah, Alex Wilson, I'm kind of like, I just don't really know anymore. I mean, I know he got a couple saves in 2015, and then last year he, just kind of fell off the map, but he just didn't get any save chances because K-Rod was fine. So, at least right now, I think Wilson would be the lead candidate to take over if K-Rod were to go down. But that's also just, a highly, speculative play. Bruce Rondon, he just seems like a head case to me. I don't know, about you, but while he is the type of guy that I love in terms of, being a reliever in fantasy because his strikeout potential is endless. He's giving up a ton of fly balls, and the attitude is just kind of taking a turn for the worse. So I suppose that he's still kind of on the map just because he throws 97 and, you know, has a 10 strikeouts or more per nine each of the last two seasons. But he's you know, regardless, I think that there's a couple guys in here that would be sort of interesting, but I would say wait for K-Rod to go down first.
Yeah, Rondon actually got the walks per nine under three last year, and that was kind of his MO, was that you never really knew, you know, where it was going once it left his hand. But
congrats
so,
to him.
Yeah, to him. Mad ups.
Shane Green, he's the last guy I want to kind of talk to you about, because, you know, right now, at least, it seems like he's on the outside looking in terms of a roster spot, on the 25-man roster spot. I'm sure he's going to be on the 40-man, but is there anything left here for you? I mean, he's 28. It's not like he's ancient, but, you know, each of the last 2 years, he's either had injury problems or he's, you know, kind of fallen off the map in terms of his stuff. Is there any interest in Shane Green for you?
Nope. Nope.
All right, then. I still think that there's a moderate amount of interest for me, just in case something were to go down. Anyways, Easy Ev, where can we reach you on Twitter if I didn't just give it away? And anything you're working on?
The easiest of all Evs, Easy Ev 3 on Twitter. But no, you'll just find me on the FWFB podcast trolling about Vincent Velasquez and other random things. So yeah, hit me up.
Yep, you can hit me up on Twitter at Mike Werner FWFB. I'm over 1,100 Twitter followers now. I'm so popular, I can't even get a hold of myself at this point. But you can check out our rankings on the website of all the different positions. I didn't rank an overall 300. I just ranked my positions. So maybe I'll do it overall. I usually draft by my positions anyways. So if you guys want a 300 out, definitely do that for you. But you can also check out my stuff on fantasypros.com. I believe we're gonna start ranking for them too, if I'm not mistaken. That's kind of tentative at this point, but I'm pretty sure that's gonna happen. I'm gonna keep doing my Baseball HQ thing, and please rate and review the show on iTunes, all the other podcast aggregators, really helps us out. Join the Facebook page, do all that stuff. So for Easy Ev and myself, keep listening to good music, and good luck this offseason. Every night I get you on the telephone. We sleep and we talk and we play till the dawn. Trying to get a handle on who we are. Sleep all night with the phone off the hook. Falling in love is never by the book. Getting close beneath the blanket of a million stars. Let's see. There was a few. There was a few where it was just
Such a good, and oh man, I love that CD so much, because I talked my mom into letting me get it, and then we popped it in on the way home, and we got through like half of Guilty Conscience before she was like, "What the hell did I just buy you?" And I was like, "You've heard this on TRL, like whatever, you know. Yeah. You've heard that you like this. You know."
Whatever. Guilty Conscience is one of my favorite songs. Well, I still can listen to that song to date, like right now, and still be just as entertained by it as I was 20 years ago.
It's a story.
Yeah, it's insanely.